Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
Film lovers, and welcome to Film Sociology,
the real show.
I'm going to get to that. Let's do the propers first. Film talk show here on WFYI HD to the point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey@wfyi.org. That's S-O-C-E-Y. Also on Facebook, also on the Twitter, at Matthew Soce. As is our guest, we'll get to her in a minute. And we have a blog on our new website.
Yes, officially launched today.
Officially launched, which you can check out at...
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
This show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes. The voice you just heard, yes, the sideline reporter for the East-West All-Stars. Inside joke. Well, what, 30 seconds in, we're already doing that. That's Kobe Slagle.
Hello, hello.
And joining us in studio... Leah DeWalt, I could not believe, I think the last time we had you on was the last time you were at Civic.
It was. That was the last time I was at Civic.
With the wonderful Jillian Mentick Moffitt. But she is here as a part of the 1940s Radio Hour, which is happening at Civic. It opened last week?
Last Friday.
Last Friday. Today. So, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And we appreciate you coming in.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
Now, of course, we realize now... I'll get to Halloween a little bit. Now, as Kobe and I were joking, yes, Elmore Leonard, the day Elmore Leonard said the show was real.
A real show.
It was like Pinocchio or the Velveteen Rabbit. It was. It became a real show because Elmore Leonard said so. But I love about it is when he says, I'm listening to Film Sociology. Elmore Leonard never listened to Film Sociology. but who am I to argue with the late great Elmore Leonard? The very first show ID I ever received was from my college days at the Ball State University, and I interviewed McIntyre Murphy of Blues Brothers fame and musician, and of course a fine musician in his own right. And I had a little micro recorder, you remember those,
the little tiny little tapes that you put in answering machines.
That's right. So I had that, and it was at the Slippery Noodle, my very first blues interview at the Noodle. It was great. Yeah, and I got done with the interview, and at the end I asked for him to do a show ID. And at the time, this is the early 90s, different era.
Totally.
At the time, WCRD, which was Ball State's student-run radio station, which is still in existence, at that time was only simulcast through the dorms. So, yeah, I had a huge audience. You know what? Not nearly as big as the audience here at HD2. But so anyway, I asked Matt Murphy for a show ID, and he said, of course. And so I hit record, and he's like, hey, this is McIntyre Murphy. When I'm on the Ball State campus, and you've never been on the Ball State campus, but I have this image of McIntyre Murphy, who I think at the time was about 60, with his giant hollow body guitar just wandering around the streets of Muncie, which is awesome. But I don't have images of Elmore Leonard when he was alive listening to WFYI.org in Michigan, but that's okay. Long story longer, he dubbed the show real.
Yes.
And we are. So, all right. Yes, we realize now that we are now officially up against
that
Halloween.
That would be cool, though, if, you know, turn on FYI. I got to hear what Matt has to say about District 9.
My own family doesn't do that, so that's really okay. Robert Irvine, maybe. Maybe his lovely wife, Gail Kim, who hopefully we'll have on the show very soon.
Did you watch the movie yet?
I have not watched the movie yet. I've been, unfortunately, busy. In the shameless plug department, while you are doing the 1940s radio hour at Civic up in Carmel, my wife is directing Tartuffe, which opens tonight on the campus of Earlham College. Yes, where there's lots of woots.
Tartuffe is full of woots.
It is in rhyme scheme. Anyway, that is happening this weekend. So hopefully when things die down from the post-Halloween lull, I will be able to check out the film Ninja's Creed. Because WFYI, HD2 is your home for Gail Kim filmographies.
I forgot. Trick-or-treating is happening tonight.
It is happening tonight because, of course, you know, well, I don't know how it was here, but at my house, it was pouring.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Big hunks of trees were falling.
Yeah.
And the power went out a couple of times. So I guess anybody griping on Facebook, yes, I know. People my age.
They were up until about 5 p.m., 6 p.m., and then they all kind of took it back, I think.
Good, good. I'm glad that they I'm glad that they buckled like a belt.
When they realized that their children would have been taken away in the twister.
Yeah. So everybody who was on Facebook who was my age but sounded like they were 80, we put on a coat. We wore an umbrella. Yes, I did. We did that. I remember going out and trick.
That's great. No one cares.
Yeah. Thank you. I wore a winter jacket over my costume one year, and there was frost on the ground and everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? It was cold, and it was dumb.
Well, and you know what? We had a different situation. I grew up in northwestern Pennsylvania, and for whatever reason, I still to this day don't know, trick-or-treating was always the Thursday of the week of Halloween. So it was
you
never
mean like,
on
you
the
mean
actual.
Like, regardless of what the day was.
Yes.
You mean
if
like
Halloween was on yes. If Halloween was on Friday, trick or treat was on Thursday. If Halloween was on Monday, trick or treat was on Thursday. So when I got here and realized that, like, oh, and everywhere else in the world that they actually do it on the day of, no matter what day of the week it is, it was kind of mind boggling. So the idea of changing the day had no effect on. It was quite normal to me, but everybody seemed to be in a huff about it.
You probably like Obamacare too. No, I'm kidding.
I didn't even go trick or treating when I was little. I just
didn't
went.
You did, but you got scrapple and pork roll because you're in Pennsylvania.
Regional.
My house was the one with all the lights turned off. It's true.
Yes. So I know about your upbringing. So we will. No, let's move on. So yeah, we're going up against Halloween, so we'll keep you company. And I watched, Emma and I watched. This was the other thing. Emma, she's going to be 12 next week.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, that's next week?
It is next week. I know. You make it sound like we're planning the special film sociology birthday party. But Emma opted to not go trick-or-treating this year.
Ooh. It's probably because in her mind she's 23.
Yeah, it is actually.
Largely, yes, that
and,
is the reason.
And she is not into the trashy female costumes with the mindset of a 23-year-old. So,
weren't you also saying though that she's developed a particular candy taste?
Yeah, she got.
That's the 12-year-old part.
She went. She got a little hipster on me, and I was like, "Honey,
I used to like nerds, but." I don't know.
I said, honey, you can't get truffles from the best chocolate in town or Giesling door to door. It doesn't work that way.
Happen.
Does not work that way. So yeah, she got a little hipster on me. I had to be pop culture Atticus Finch and sit her down and say, honey, scout. But no. So last night we had endangered species chocolate, so I could add to her hipster cred.
Mm-hmm.
And we watched Coraline. We watched Young Frankenstein, her choices. And then, of course.
Yeah, Coraline's one of her favorites, right?
Yes. And of course, she and I chatted with Neil Gaiman many, many moons ago here on Film Sociology, pre-Kobe, PC. And then we watched Sammy Terry
yes.
with Night of the Living Dead. So lots of fun on Halloween night. So,
very
and you
scary.
Know what? The great thing was, even though it was delayed, we had no interruptions. We didn't, and because there will be the dim bulb that comes up to the door with no lights on and still ring.
Mm-hmm.
Go away. If you can't figure out the Halloween etiquette rules, it's not my problem. Like when knocking on ringing the doorbell at 10 o'clock at night when there's no lights on. That happened at our old house. Go away. So there.
Yeah, that's not good.
What'd you dress up Frank as?
Get off my lawn.
Frank is a cowboy.
So Matthew Stafford defeated him, huh?
Oh, my God.
And then
Dez
Bryant was also yelling at Frank?
Yes. Yes, good. Dez Bryant gave Frank an earful.
I bet he did. Mm-hmm. This is football, Leah. Don't
Thank
worry about
you.
It. Because this is.
I figured you'd clue me in eventually.
we're about 10 minutes into the film show, and we've done Halloween and football. All right. Well, now, ladies and gentlemen, opening in theaters today, well, there's Ender's Game, which I always talk about the films I haven't seen first. And then there's Free Birds, which is about turkeys, not Lynyrd Skynyrd. Wow. Owen Wilson, Woody Harrelson, and Amy Poehler provide voices on Free
Birds. It looked funny.
We shall see.
And they're doing a commercial with Dwight Howard.
Ooh.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Dwight Howard also irritating Free Birds. Free Birds don't want to play with Dwight either.
No.
And then we have Las Vegas, which is the one-time teaming of Michael Douglas, Robert De Niro, Morgan Freeman, and Kevin Kline. Four Oscar winners. And there are certain pairings. I think De Niro's a great example of this. I think he's accepting scripts just to work with other actors his age.
Mm-hmm.
So I've read lots of interviews, not a geriatric version of The Hangover.
Are you sure?
That's what they're saying, and I'm not going to argue with
them.
I think it's probably four older guys with a last chance of youth hurrah, is what I'm guessing. So Kobe's got a blank stare.
Well, no, I was thinking about that because I saw a review, I forget where I saw it, but it was the headline was Hangover for the AARP crowd.
Because they're
which
old.
Is what I thought when I saw the first preview.
Guess
like
what?
I almost thought
exactly.
It was a joke. Like I was like, oh, they're making a spoof of it. But then I instantly recognized the actors and thought, oh, this must be a little more serious. So
no, I think it's the experience over youth tale is my guess, is that they can hold their own. So
nice.
Yeah, so there is that.
And there's some getting old jokes along the way.
You think?
Yeah.
You think so? And then
I'm going to go out on a branch and say there's probably some getting old jokes
along
the way.
That's kind of like saying, yo, the Cowboys, there's some choking that's going to happen. But anyway,
somewhere in there,
there's going to be some choking.
I know.
Does Tony Romo have to choke a game? Sorry, back in the football. And also opening today, Kobe, I'm warning you. You have been warned. The film About Time, which is from the creator, that's from Richard Curtis, the man who gave us Love Actually and Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Oh, right, because those titles are bigger than the actual title on every poster I've seen.
Exactly. Well, and it's about a young man who realizes he can travel through time, and he does this so he can have many, many encounters with Rachel McAdams. You know her, Kobe, as the Notebook Girl.
Wasn't she also the
and
wife
the
of someone?
The Wedding Crashers Girl.
Yeah, she was the Wedding Crashers Girl.
And the wife of someone who traveled through time in
Time Traveler's Wife. Which it looks like that a little bit. This reminds me of when she was in The Vow and with her and Channing Tatum.
Oh,
and it was
yes.
The guy from Dear John and the girl from The Notebook, even though The Vow was not based on a Nicholas Sparks novel. So, yeah, Kobe, this is not an Edwardian era.
I like the description you gave me in my office. That was
the time travel thing. Yeah, the romantic time travel something we can't say on the air. So I'm just saying, a certain somebody in your house, not Frank, we might see the trailer for this and clutch your hands together and say, we should go see this. And you're going to say, you should go with your mom to go see this.
I think she was talking about going to see that.
Really?
With her mom?
With her mom?
I think so.
I think that's probably the best idea.
Okay.
So, now that we have those taken care of, let's dive into 12 Years a Slave.
Let's take a drastic,
dramatic,
very sharp turn.
Dark turn. So, yeah, a serious tone. Play it.
I want to ask you what part of the country you come from.
I originate from Canada. I guess where that is.
Oh, I know where Canada is. I've been there myself.
Well, travel for a slave.
Solomon Northup is an expert player on the violin.
I was born a free man, lived with my family in New York.
Be good for your mother.
Until the day I was deceived.
To Solomon.
Kidnapped. Sold into slavery.
Well, boy, how you feel now?
My name is Solomon Northup. I'm a free man.
And you have no right whatsoever to detain me.
You're no free man. You're nothing but a Georgia runaway.
Went down to the River Jordan.
And that servant
that don't obey his lord
shall be beaten with many stripes.
That's scripture.
The condition of your laborers, it's all wrong.
They're my property.
You say that with pride.
I say it as fact.
Speak!
Man does how he pleases with his property.
You come here.
I say come here!
Days ago, I was with my family in my home. Now you tell me all is lost.
If you want to survive, do and say as little as possible.
Well, I don't want to survive. I want to live.
I thought you knowed something.
I did as instructed. There's something wrong. It's wrong with the instruction.
Master brought you here to work. Any more, I'll earn you 100 lashes.
I know what it like to be the object of Master's lashes.
No.
In his own time, good Lord, I'll manage them all.
I will survive. I will not fall into despair. I will keep myself hardy till freedom is opportune.
If I was a free man, I'm not a slave.
I saw this morning, and I missed the press screening for this, so it was intriguing to go see this. This was quite a crowd for a 10:50 a.m. screening today.
Public screening opened.
Yeah, it was public screening. Yeah. It was first one of the day. That happens from time to time here at Film Sociology, and quite a crowd for this one. It's directed by Steve McQueen, the director, not the actor, the gentleman who gave us Moon, among other things, and. It's a kick to the chest. It really is. And I remember going into it, and I talked to much kudos to Jeff Marker from the Gainesville Times, my colleague who I often talk to on the phone. We often call each other on the phone when movie things happen, Kobe. Mm-hmm. just to bounce ideas off each other. And I kept hearing things that this was going to do for cinematically for slavery what Schindler's List did for the Holocaust. Ooh. Now, it's two entirely different films from two entirely different filmmakers. I get at that. I think, but I will agree that it's a must-see. Mm. It really, really is. If you get a lot of your history from the cinema, or if anything, if it's a starting point, and I've often said that about film. If seeing a film makes you want to go and do research about
right,
it, whether it was to learn more about it, or if you think the documentarian is full of bunk and you want to prove him or her wrong by looking up what is right or is wrong, then I think the film has accomplished its job. Mm. And I talked with Jeff, who actually read this book that this is based on, and said that the book is even more harsh than the film. Yeah, exactly. So, that being said, yeah, it is a look at slavery that is not exploitation. It's not a revenge film because I'm not going to watch Django Unchained after watching this anytime soon. But and the lead, Chiwetel Ejiofor, who I absolutely love, and he's amazing in this. He's not a pariah. He's not a Christ figure. He is not. He's not a superhero, and he's not a symbol of. He is just a guy trying to get home. Mm. You know. And as you heard in this, like he's a free man living in New York State, and he is kidnapped. There's a couple of minor moments, but they're minor, heavy-handed moments, like him looking through a cage, and then the camera moves up, and he's like three blocks away from Congress. So, right, little things like that. There's a scene where he's singing at a grave site with a bunch of other people at a funeral, but those are minor quibbles on that. But yeah, really strong cast. Some of the folks you recognize, you have Michael Fassbender, you have Benedict Cumberbatch. Do we have that thing? We don't.
Benedict Cumberbatch, Oxford University.
The first time I'm able to use that, and not really appropriate with this film. Who else you got? Brad Pitt, who was one of the producers on this.
I see. Okay, I saw that in the trailer, and I was wondering if that was him.
Yeah, he's got like two scenes, and they look like they were written exclusively for Brad Pitt.
Oh, imagine that.
Yeah, because you hear him in the trailer. He's a builder who is brought in, and even though he's got two scenes, he does create plot things, Mr. Slagle.
Plot things happen
because of Brad Pitt. So, well, as I once accidentally said, Lee, on the show, plot things happen, and sometimes they happen after character things happen. Now, if you get them both at the same time, that's tremendous.
Right.
If you can get a plot thing mixed with a character thing.
I mean, that's what they teach you in, you know, writing classes. Do character things.
And do plot things.
And do plot things.
You've got a piece of literature right there.
It's and of course, if you're Elmore Leonard, you write even better character things. That doesn't necessarily mean it has to move plot things. So anyway, so that being said, I think there was one person that walked out watching this. Mm-hmm. They show the brutality. They do. It's not for the faint of heart. But as I said, it's not. An exploitative manner. It's not Django Unchained. It's not Mandingo. I mean, it's really at times hard to watch. But I have a feeling it's like apparently like the book. It's merely a fraction of what actually happened. Yeah. So, one of the other thing as far as plot and character things happening, the relationships not only between slave and master, but slave and fellow slave. I mean, it's a complex circle going on with everybody involved in this. Also, a big shout, I have to find out more about her, Lupita Nyong'o, I hope I'm saying that right. She plays a slave that befriends Chiwetel Ejiofor's character, but is also, and remember, some would even say they weren't considered slaves, they were considered property. And she also has a very harrowing relationship with Michael Fassbender. Mm-hmm. Dare I say love hate? No, it's more hate. But
I heard a really interesting interview with her. I don't remember exactly what program it was on, but just of her looking into this role and studying this role, and that the audition for this was the hardest one she'd ever done in her life. Because she's quite young. I don't remember the exact age, but she's, I think, right out of film school or right out of a program. And they've searched and searched and searched, and then once they found her, they kind of went all the way, and she's just had a really incredible experience.
Yeah, really, really. And especially when you're working with the likes of Fassbender and Ejiofor. Chiwetel Ejiofor, I always remember the very first thing I saw him in was a film called Dirty Pretty Things, which was a Stephen Frears film. And at the time, he played, he was, I believe, a Nigerian doctor who was working as a hotel clerk in London. And Audrey Tautou was the big star. So it was, you know, a new film. It was a dark film from the star of Amelie. And he was just fantastic. And I was like, who is this guy? And also Sophie Alcaneda was also in that film. And anything I've seen him in, even something as pedestrian as Salt, he just brings a level that's just a step above everybody else. He's really, really good in this, and I'm really hoping he gets. And he's that guy. He's, you know, it took me months to say his name properly. And of course, one of my all-time favorite moments with my buddy in Radio Crime, Abdul Hakim Shabazz. We had talked about him working with Don Cheadle in the film Talk to Me, which was the Petey Green film. And one of Abdul's callers referred to him as the English African American.
Hmm.
Oops. It's all in the timing, I guess. So Kobe, I would say definitely go see this, but then don't end the night with this. I'm giving him marital advice. Mm-hmm. You don't end the evening with 12 Years a Slave. I think everybody should see 12 Years a Slave, and then maybe watch Bob's Burgers or Archer or something. It's powerful. It's going to be hard to watch, but I think it's necessary. And I know I'm making the film sound like castor oil, but you really should. You really should. So, all right. Got a couple other notes going on tonight. Do you still have the yes right there? Because going on in downtown Columbus, Indiana,
right,
from today through Sunday is the Yes Film Fest.
Mm-hmm.
Could you play Sir Ben again? Not Ben again.
Yes, 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 yes!
right. So that is going on. There's going to be Q&A sessions with some of the filmmakers, domestic and international, as it says, narratives, documentaries, and shorts.
Independent film.
Independent film. So go to yesfilmfestival.com or yescinema.org for all that information. If you're road tripping down to Columbus, Indiana, Kobe, how are things at your alma mater?
Well, tonight.
Tonight.
We have 6:30 p.m. History du Cinema, 1998 documentary, foreign language. I'm assuming French.
Oui.
Saturday, 3 o'clock from 1988, Dangerous Liaisons.
Wow. You've not seen that.
No way I've not.
And it sounds like you don't want to.
I don't know anything about it.
Well, it is it's a story of seduction and game playing between two very conniving individuals using especially young ladies as pawns.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens when a con artist starts to actually develop a heart.
Mm.
And it's John Malkovich, Glenn Close, young Michelle Pfeiffer, even younger Uma Thurman, and one scene by my guy, Peter Capaldi. But that's not really the reason why you should check it out.
My guy.
But the new Doctor Who. So there is that. And I know they just, I don't think it's come to the States yet, but there is a Japanese version of Dangerous Liaisons that has been filmed. So I'm intrigued by that. Anyway, what else is going on?
That's at 3 o'clock, 7 o'clock tomorrow night, Comeback Africa from 1959. Sunday, 3 p.m., Goya in Bordeaux from 1999.
Mm-hmm.
And 2011, from 2011 at 6:30 p.m., Sunday evening, Albert Nobbs.
Oh, Glenn Close is a man.
Mm-hmm.
So. Well, that's what it is. That's what it was based on. It was based on a play, and she had owned the rights for it for a long time. I can't remember if she did it on stage or not.
Ooh.
And then did the film with the other people.
The Alice in Wonderland girl. I can never remember her name.
Thank you. I got to write that down, so we'll work on that. All right. We will take a short break, and we'll talk about what is new and old on DVD and Blu-ray. We have lots of dead people we like besides Sammy Terry, and we'll talk with Leah DeWalt about the 1940s Radio Hour. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
Any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs.
You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So, do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
Blockbuster Video! Wow, what a difference!
Well, in case you didn't see it, here it is again.
If you get a chance, go to YouTube and check out Tyler Hansborough meets Meta World Peace. It's funny. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msoci@WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter at Matthew Soci. In the shameless plug department, Thursday, November 7th, at 7 o'clock at First Mennonite Church. This is a free event. This is an event called Risk of Pursuing Your Passion. And this is part of Spirit and Place. You can go to spiritandplace.org. And I'm just going to paraphrase from the literature. A chef, a multi-field entrepreneur, an artistic director, an author, and a visual artist will discuss the personal, financial, and creative risk that they took in pursuing non-traditional careers. Why am I bringing this up? Because yours truly will be hosting the this conversation that's going on. So anyway, Thursday night, 7 o'clock, 7 p.m., November 7th at First Mennonite Church. Okay, hey, before we get into new DVDs and old DVDs and Blu-rays, working on our post-Halloween wrap-up, I didn't get a chance to talk about this film last week, and it's still in theaters, I know, but I think Sammy Terry kind of threw us off in a good way. But I actually do want to recommend the remake of Carrie.
Ooh.
Which, of course, opened 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. The ad for that keeps popping up on my Pandora and scaring the daylights out of me.
Well, that's what it's there for.
Exactly.
So this is a film that I'm putting in the same category as Cape Fear and, yes, even both Chocolate Factory films and Charlotte's Web, where both the original and the remake can coexist in the same universe. Now, I know there's a lot of people, especially online, that think that's blasphemy.
It's true.
They don't host this show. I do. The original Carrie, you know, from 1976, of course, Piper Laurie and Sissy Spacek, directed by Brian De Palma. We've brought that up. You're right there, Cole?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. And of course, the remake has Chloe Martz and Julianne Moore, and it's directed by Kimberly Pierce. So it's a female director. Her big title was Boys Don't Cry. So I was fascinated to see how they would handle the material, and I like the actors. Now, the beginning of the film and the end of the film, I kind of have issues with because it's a 2013 remake, and I suppose I had to be done. I just didn't agree with it.
Okay.
The Julianne Moore
things that were too different, or
well,
just too...
not so much. And by the way, I've never read the book because it's not book sociology. I shun literature. No. The very beginning of the film has Julianne Moore's character, and Carrie White's mom in this film is much more of a lunatic, I guess, than Piper Laurie's version. The Onion summed it up best with Julianne Moore's. She doesn't so much chew scenery, but bleed all over it. but her character's into self-mutilation quite a bit, and as she's giving birth to her child, there is a moment where she's looking at the child and grabs a pair of scissors, and then decides to make the child her project.
Okay.
Not a child, a project. It would be like calling Frank a project. Emma a project, not cool. And then the very end, I don't want to give away the ending of a 35-year-old film, 36-year-old film, but the ending of the original Carrie still gives me the willies to this day. And what happens in the remake is, of course, you know, because we're in post-Columbine America,
right,
that it is brought up that for lack of a better term, the Amy Irving character from the original who survives is speaking in front of like a grand jury and a police report about this mass killing that happened at a high school.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a moment with a tombstone, but not like the original film. That being said, as the father to an 11-year-old daughter, it's a hard watch. Both of them are, really, because, and of course, the opening scene is Carrie gets her period and her mother never told her and she's flipping out. And of course, every girl in the locker room is just mocking her. And because it's 2013, they're also filming it and putting it online.
Oh, no. Yep.
So, but it captures the ending also kind of has a bullying PSA feel to it, which is, I don't think, necessarily needed. I think what the film itself does that without hammering home a message, but the actors are really good. And, you know, watching Carrie go through this, there is that, and it reminded me actually of the play Medea that I directed with Jolene, where you understand why she's this angry, but she obviously takes her revenge way too far.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, long story short is I think it's worth checking out, even though I know, Mr. Schlegel, the scary movie is not your thing.
Not a chance.
You say it with your mic on?
Yeah.
So
yeah, I got it now.
Okay, you got it? Mm-hmm. All right. So anyway, it's still out there. And it's funny because over at AMC Castleton, they have two posters, the same poster.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a film that was originally slated to come out in the spring. It was supposed to come out last spring. And I understand you don't have to dump all of your horror movies in October. Mm-hmm. I get that, but I think it was a wise move on Screen Gems to wait until October to do that. So that is out there. Now, tomorrow night on Svengoolie on MeTV at 10 o'clock, the original Frankenstein.
Ooh.
So, and that's actually just ripe for enjoyment since Emma and I watched Young Frankenstein again last night. So perfect timing on that. All right. Let's move on to DVDs and Blu-rays. The big title this week is Monsters University.
Yes.
You're on that.
Yes.
You have Sir Ben screaming. No. And Pixar, of course, they've been in sequel mode for a while.
Yeah.
And Disney. I know they're separate, but it feels the same. This is a film, of course, it's a prequel. It's Mike and Sully meeting for the first time on college. Guess what? They don't like each other right away.
Oh.
Not quite in
it's
the...
like Wicked.
Wow. I would actually rather listen to Idina Menzel and Christian Chenoweth than Billy Crystal and John Goodman. So yeah, and I definitely don't want to hear the guys sing. So very good. Yeah, they don't get along right away. So, but the thing I liked about the film most,
but they got to work together.
They got
to
work together.
Overcome adversity.
They do, or university,
or university,
or the wizard.
Joel,
sorry, I'm
Joel
stuck.
Gray.
I'm stuck. I know.
No, it's fine.
So beautiful.
But. It kept the feeling of orientation. I don't know. I immediately got flashbacks, especially of, you know, you're getting your bearings. You're figuring out who you're going to hang out with, what you're going to do, how are you going to identify, you know, your college identity. And it captures that really well.
Yeah. The monsters brought out the empathy.
Yeah. And yes. And there are monster frat guys.
Yes.
Awesome.
And
awesome.
You know what they are? They're brotastic.
They are ready to rock.
They are ready. You know what? They're 98% of college monsters
stoked.
Stoked. So, so it captures that. And
awesome.
In the sequel world, far better than Cars 2. Not
better
even
than Planes.
You know what? I missed Planes.
And
it's
I think
not,
a lot
it's
of
not really a sequel because it's not, yeah. Actually, I think Chris Lloyd saw it and he didn't like it. But I don't think
I would argue that the original Cars wasn't as good as the original Monsters, Inc., though.
Oh, no, no, no.
No.
Definitely not. No, no.
No.
At
no chance.
Cars at one point was the low point in Pixar, but still likable. No, I think
3-year-old boys everywhere disagree.
Whatever.
But I'm with you.
They're not hosting a show. But it's better than Cars 2, not even close to Toy Story 2 or 3.
Mm-mm.
So. But I mean, I didn't think on paper. I was like, I don't think we really need another one because I'm an old person and I'm fickle. But watching it was nice to visit these guys again for 90 minutes or so.
Awesome.
So that is out there. Now we go to what I've now dubbed the laziest film I've seen this year.
Ooh.
Not necessarily the worst
really?
Film I've seen
and we're
this
late
year.
Late in the year.
What
not,
is this?
Well, this is a film that came out in the summer. So,
okay.
But this really, I was not looking forward to it when I first saw the trailers for it, and then I rented it, and it was R.I.P.D.
Oh.
starring one of your guys and not one of your guys. This is the one with Ryan Reynolds and Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
I'm getting a blank stare from Leah
DeWalt.
You're not missing much. It is Ryan Reynolds plays a cop who was killed in the line of duty and therefore is recruited by Rest in Peace Department. So he is a dead cop who goes back into the regular world to find criminal spirits who have not entered heaven, the afterlife, something. And he's teamed up with a grizzled old veteran played by Jeff Bridges, who's kind of doing a variation of his Rooster Cogburn bit.
Yep.
So Mr. Bridges got a big check. I hope he and his wife and kids had a good vacation wherever they went. Mary Louise Parker is in this picture as well. And if you look at the trailers, it screams Men in Black. And I think
it has the humor. Like, is it supposed to be funny too?
Yes,
in
it's
that
supposed
same
to be funny.
Okay.
Yes. Oh, like because they're dead, they have to.
I'm way more stuck on Ghost than Men in Black.
I'm getting to that. So, they have to because they're dead. They have to take new bodies when they're roaming the earth. And yeah,
got it.
And Ryan Reynolds is a little Chinese guy, and Jeff Bridges is a smoking hot blonde model.
Oh my gosh,
Marissa Miller. So well.
So do you get to look at Ryan Reynolds very much in the movie?
Yeah, but Kobe doesn't want to hear that.
I don't care.
Kobe has a list of actors he really doesn't care for, and Mr. Reynolds is on that list big time. Mm. Yeah. So, but
I don't mind looking at Mr. Reynolds.
So you could watch this on mute.
There you go.
There you go. So,
but when am I watching him, or am I watching the short?
No, you're watching mostly Reynolds. Okay. Mostly Reynolds. But you watch the trailers and it feels like it's Men in Black because of the, I think, unexpected success of Men in Black 3, which I still need to rent someday. It felt like this kind of got rushed into production. Bridges has even said in public, it said out to the press that he wasn't really crazy about the experience. Wasn't crazy about the film, but. Hmm. As we find out in the first 10 minutes of the film, which you don't see anything in the trailer about, is Reynolds is a Boston cop. So he, you know what he is, Kobe? Wicked hot.
Wicked.
But he's also at Jackie's Packies on Route 34. But look it up, Real Housewives of South Boston. But he is a cop that has taken some. He's a little corrupt, but. He's the good guy.
On
so,
the scale of corrupt that exists.
He's kind of on the low. He wants out.
Got it.
And, of course, his partner, played by Kevin Bacon, got to stop casting Kevin these roles. Mm. Between this and X-Men, I'm like, I don't think you need to play the creepy guy anymore. But because his partner does not want, you know, Bacon kills Reynolds' character. So it adds Ghost meets Men in Black.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, good. It's ripping off two films in a lazy manner. So that bummed me out. I mean, I wasn't looking forward to it, and it bummed me out even more. You got something for that? Do we have Jackie or Jackie?
I'm
Gina,
sorry. I was
the bile off your mouth after thinking about Ryan Reynolds?
No, see, I was looking at stuff that's coming up here, coming to theaters in the next month or so.
And really?
Can we
after focus
we play
on
this
show?
Hang on a second. Okay. We'll go with...
Otto, don't flatter yourself. It wasn't that great.
Also with Kevin Bacon. Very good.
I'm just saying, it's snoozable.
There you go.
Those are individual tracks?
Those are individual tracks.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. Be cool. They don't do cool things.
Why can't we just see them do cool stuff all the time? I'm in a movie. I have a limited amount of time. Be cool.
Thank you, Gina.
Yep.
And congrats, Gina. Have fun in Africa. The other title of note, which I got to, not enough people got to see this, and I'm hoping more people will check it out on DVD and Blu-ray. And I will recommend this looking in the general direction of Mr. Slagle with a bit of snark. But it is the vampire...
And that's different from...
Any other snark?
Got it.
Nothing really. It's the vampire drama Byzantium, which is directed by Neil Jordan, and it's, I think, more enjoyable than his last vampire venture, Interview with the Vampire. But this stars, and again, I'm butchering this, but Saoirse Ronan, a.k.a. the Atonement Girl. And she,
oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that girl. And she was, of course, in Hannah, the assassin film. But she plays a vampire with her mother figure played by Gemma Arterton, and I wish all maternal figures look like Gemma Arterton. Mm. Thank you, Tamara Drew. But these are two that are roaming the earth looking for blood, and they're not twinkly, they're not sparkly vampires, Kobe. That's the only reason why I'm recommending it to you. Mm-hmm. To pass on to
sparkle.
You. They do not sparkle, and they look like they're having a good time.
Oh yeah?
Hmm.
Well, by comparison, really.
But okay.
And they're in London instead of the Pacific Northwest.
That's cool.
So, but it is a grown-up vampire movie. So you should go check that out.
That was a good movie.
It's a real vampire movie. It's terrific.
It's also an art film.
It is an art film. It played at the art cinemas. So, ooh. Okay. Also out on Blu-ray, we got a few titles. One that we found out is going to be, of course, Emma and I went to Riff Tracks treatment of Night of the Living Dead last week. So yes, we watched Night of the Living Dead twice. I love my daughter. But we found out December 5th, the next Riff Tracks. We need to do a group trip for this.
Group outing?
Group outing, I think. Because you've not experienced Riff Tracks.
I don't know what this is.
Riff Tracks is three of the guys from Mystery Science Theater 3000. But this is the smart marketing. They now have a deal where they can riff on mainstream movies. The way they get around it is you purchase their MP3, you watch the movie while listening to their MP3 at the same time.
Oh.
Clever.
Okay.
And of course, if you want to skip that, you can go to YouTube and check out some of their, like, and of course, their treatment of Twilight is,
oh my gosh,
it's outstanding.
Oh, I'm sure.
We love you, Bianca. As I drink from my Haterade mug. So, anyway, Riff Tracks, is doing another show on December 5th, and they're showing this film, which apparently you need to have this on Blu-ray, the 1960s holiday cult classic of bad, Santa Claus Conquers the Martians.
Wow.
What's it about? You should have listened the first time I said the title.
Well,
Santa Claus and Aliens. Big Green Men.
From
so.
What year? You just
it
said?
Was like early 60s.
Nice.
With the film debut of Pia Zadora.
Mm.
So, the thing is, I think Lynn and Emma and I are, we've seen this before. We don't know if it's a repeat Riff Tracks or if it's all new material. So okay. That's got to be the one thing, because I should check in with...
Oh, my goodness.
Kobe just went to IMDb and pulled up the Santa Claus Conquers the Martian page.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It's everything like that and a bag of chips. And it's worth every dime watching it in a theater with people.
In space blazing color.
Yep. 61? 64. 64. Yeah. There's that. So that is out in case you need that on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
In case you need that clear picture and great quality sound of
available.
Santa Claus Conquers the Martians.
I keep getting this visual from, was it Ernest Saves Christmas that they were doing the Christmas film with the like swamp thing that came in?
Something
that keeps
like
coming
that.
Into my
It could be like that.
Brain.
So we will have to, that's December 5th. Go to Fathom Events and find out what theater in which theaters in Indianapolis will be carrying that. But I think we should do a group outing, because I don't think Ferris Wheel Bianca's had the Riff Track experience either.
So, no, I don't think so.
You know, it'd be like, it'd be an evening with the Sosies and the Slagles.
Oh,
I've dragged Kobe into the sitcom husband world.
Yes.
Kicking and screaming. So we
anything but a horror film.
And we come up with, yeah, he's not a horror film guy.
I'm
but,
not
but,
either.
Is it because why would you pay to get scared?
It's because I don't enjoy watching people get hurt at all. I try to avoid that in my life. And so paying $8 to watch that live in front of me makes no sense. And the images stick with me too, like,
oh yeah,
way too much. And I know I'm an actor. I'm a performer. I've done film.
Say,
I know it's not real. I know how they do it, but the images will stick with me and haunt me.
By the way,
it could be real.
But
I'm not even that far. I'm just, it's just, it.
I'm glad you mentioned it, because I would say, I loved your work in Dracula.
Oh, yeah.
At IRT.
Thank you.
All right.
All the biting.
Yes. Also out on, we got that right. Also out on Blu-ray, because there's about 1,000 of these, and Kobe, I think you've only seen one, and we'll have to work on these, but I think it's from 1969, Hanging for Django. The original, well, this is not even the original. This is not the Franco Nero Django. There was, because of the success of Django, there became dozens and dozens of Italian Django knockoffs. And, this one has Anthony Stefan, I believe, playing Django. So there is that. It's kind of like the Bruce Lee films where Lee is spelled 27 different ways. Mm-hmm. So that is there. And speaking of Jeff Bridges, I always remember 1993, besides the year that I graduated from college. But he had three films, two of which were outstanding. He was in the remake of The Vanishing, which I wasn't that crazy about. He was in American Heart, which I really, really liked. And then finally, apparently this is now coming out on Blu-ray for the first time, Fearless, with directed by Peter Weir, where he survives a plane crash and has a feeling of immortality.
Ooh.
Tom Hulce, Isabella Rossellini, John Turturro, and getting an Academy Award nomination out of this, Rosie Perez. As a mother who's, she, as we find out, tried to physically hold on to her child as the plane was crashing, and she couldn't hold on. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. So excellent performance from Jeff Bridges and Rosie Perez for that one. So, shifting gears. Hi, Leah.
Why, hello.
So, tell us about the 1940s Radio Hour, which is happening up in Carmel at Booth Tarkington Civic of Pasadena. Los Angeles Angels.
Yeah. So close. So close.
Sorry,
it
Brent.
It's quite far away from us downtown folks, but It's fun. It's just fun. You get to live in the 1942, December 21st, 1942.
A day that will not really live in infamy, but
no, unless you've done this show twice in my case. Twice for actually many people because Civic did this show, I want to say like 11 years ago or something, and so a lot of the musicians are returning. Oh. It certainly won't, you know, change your life, but it's people love this show. You just get to be reminded of this era and just live in it. There's nothing fantastical. There's no.
Well, you're in it.
Well, I know. Thank you, Matt. But, you know, my husband doesn't really like musicals, but, you know, he's of that vein of nobody just breaks out into song, which a lot of people, and I understand, but I watch musicals because people break out into spontaneous song, but I understand the sentiment.
Cobe?
What?
I'm sorry. Go on, Lee. It's all right.
And so this, you are actually watching, a radio studio in New York City in 1942, and you watch from when the kind of house manager turns the lights on for the night until he turns them off. And so you watch all the characters come in, you know, in their 40s dress, and we all have our jobs that we're coming from. Mm-hmm. And we get ready for the show and chit chat with each other. And then we go on the air, and the theater audience becomes our live studio audience.
Of course.
We have a, you know, there's appropriate applause signs and everything.
Oh, yes.
And then after the show, you watch us kind of wind back down and get our coats and get our checks and leave. And it's just really lovely. All of the songs are standards from that time period. So it's Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy, Gal from Kalamazoo. It's wonderful.
Now, full disclosure, the last 2 years I directed at your alma mater, mm-hmm. Anderson University.
Anderson University. Sorry.
It's catching.
Only because it's him.
It's catching on. I've directed a 1940s radio production, mm-hmm. of It's a Wonderful Life. Which was lovely. Thank you. My lovely wife, Lynn Perkins, is directing it at AU this year. Mm-hmm. But that is kind of the same setup where it's, you get a little bit of before the show goes on and then the show itself with live commercials and all that. Mm-hmm. Now, it sounds like there's a little bit of, Do character things happen before
character things the plot do things happen? Character okay. things do happen, and some people are surprised that plot things happen in this show. But they do. Like even this is you know I am married to a non-performer. And after the show, this is one of the best compliments you can get from a non-performer. He said, "I actually really liked that." Because I think that the way I described it, he thought it was going to be like a cabaret style where like we get in 40s costumes and sing 40s songs where things do happen and character things happen.
And even though Brent Marty's in it, it's not a cabaret. Well, it is cabaret.
Well.
Hi, Brent. Now, tell us about your character because you have a giant blonde wig.
I do. I am playing Ginger Brooks, the gum-chewing
not a
waitress.
Stripper name.
It's not. It's not. She's the closest to the pinup of all of them for sure.
We have Betty Grable in our studio.
That's
right now.
What my wig resembles. I did a lot of research with Betty Grable.
I also did a lot of research with Betty Grable, but not for the show.
Not for 40s Radio Hour. And so it was really interesting though, because kind of playing that flirty, flirtatious character, but not in a modern way, you know, because it was very, very different. How
oh,
you
yes.
held yourself, how you sat, how you walked, how you know, you can like look up and down at every man who walks by, but it's in a different way than you would right now.
Show us your ankles.
Yes, exactly. Oh, and my ankles show. It's a really beautiful show. And, you know, it's a lot of the cast is made up of mostly seasoned performers. Everyone's on stage for almost the entire time. It runs with no intermission. Because, of course, once you're live on air,
you're up in like the show,
exactly.
Only less standards.
That, too, is a real show.
And less plot things. There's character things going on, but that's about it.
Okay. Yes. Oh, money. But yeah, so it's a great ensemble of people who just get to kind of live in this radio studio. And it's, you know, if something small were to go wrong, you know, like if you leave a prop somewhere, you get to just walk across and get it. You know, it's actually quite a relaxing show. For the lineup of shows that I've done in the last year, this is not Julius Caesar. This is not.
It's not. Yeah. Dracula.
Exactly.
You know what? It's not even Three Bags Full. That's the show I directed her in. Don't worry about it.
That was my first show in Indianapolis after I graduated. It's true.
I'm to blame. You're welcome. So that's very cool. So where can people go for information? It's running this weekend and next weekend,
yes,
right?
Yes, we run through November 9th. You can go to the Booth Tarkington Civic Theater website. There's also quite a lot of information on Facebook about it. Civictheater.org is the website. And Yeah, we run through next Saturday. The Saturday show is a 5 p.m. and it's and Brent Marty is on stage with us. The entire band. That's actually the live band
on stage.
It's 13 people playing 17 instruments. You know, so I mean, it's still a 17 piece orchestra, and it will blow you away. We can't really hear ourselves sometimes because this band is so phenomenal. We rehearsed with a piano for the longest time, and so finally we got the musicians in to play these songs, and we realized, oh, we have a show. Holy cow. I grew up with that music. My grandpa played, I want to say, alto sax in a big band, and that sound is just, you have to be in the room. You have to experience it live and there aren't many big bands like that.
No, there are not.
Anymore,
that's a lost art.
And singing with that band, oh my gosh, is one of the greatest things I've done on stage in a while. So.
Excellent. Well, very cool. Did you ever see Radio Days? The Woody Allen film? Add that to your list.
Okay.
Add that to your list, because that's a Valentine to radio plays, radio shows, and the people involved with them.
Yeah.
On both ends, from the radio studio and from the people listening.
Mm-hmm.
So check
and
that
I will
out.
Say that we have our little mics on our cheek, but that's really only for the dialogue. The two mics are hot and live, and
yes,
really sing into them, which is really nice. And it's a very unique sound also singing into those. It's been really great.
And Brent Marnie doesn't need a mic.
Well, he doesn't say much. He's the conductor. He plays Zoot Doubleman with a Zoot Doubleman orchestra.
Of course he is. So he's got the look. And he's got the look. All right. Do we have Dead People We Like intro?
Oh, yeah. We got
that. Let's do that.
Doing our the annual show of Dead People We Like.
There's a pretty big one this week.
We don't have time for Dead People We Don't Like.
Yes.
No, we don't, actually. And again, there was a couple I forgot to read from last week because Sammy Terry was in giving Kobe sage advice about marriage. So we didn't get a chance to do this. But Anthony Hines, the chief architect behind the Hammer horror films, passed away at the age of 91. I just saw one of the Hammer horror films earlier this week, Vampire Circus. Fascinating.
Wow.
But this is a guy who was a producer behind films like Die Die My Darling with Tallulah Bankhead and a young Stephanie Powers. You might have to Google search her later, Cobe. Evil of Frankenstein, Kiss of the Vampire, the 1962 version of Phantom of the Opera with Herbert Lom, Curse of the Werewolf, Brides of Dracula, Horror of Dracula, Revenge of Frankenstein, and Curse of Frankenstein. So, you know, one of those words of fill in the blank. So anyway, but I'm a big fan of the Hammer horror films of the 50s through the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And then William Harrison, who was the writer of the film, the original 1975 film Rollerball. This is the logo that's on my Facebook page.
Yeah.
But it's the one film with James Caan, Maude Adams, John Houseman, and it's a futuristic kind of gladiator sport. And of course, in the future, everybody wears shoulder pads and football helmets. But it's kind of roller derby meets gladiator meets water polo. So,
yeah,
you know, putting the ball into this. So there's that. British director Antonia Bird did a lot of British television, but some of the films she's known for was the film Priest, Mad Love, the odd romantic, that's not really a romantic comedy, teaming up Chris O'Donnell with Drew Barrymore, Face with Robert Carlyle, and a film that it's a weird, dark cannibal comedy called Ravenous.
Ooh.
With with Robert Carlyle and Guy Pearce, and I don't think he gets eaten soon enough, David Arquette. So there is that. And because I'm a child of the 70s, and the 70s, of course, Kobe.
Different time.
Stunt coordinator turned director Hal Needham apparently died right after last week's show. This is a guy who did a lot of stunt work, but is best known for directing Burt Reynolds in films like Smokey and the Bandit,
ooh,
1 and 2, Cannonball Run, Stroker Ace, not the best, not even close. But he also did films like Megaforce, Rad, and Body Slam. Yes, he did a wrestling film in the late 80s. But great interview with him on Fresh Air. He put out his memoirs a couple of years ago and was a stunt coordinator on a number of films, worked with John Wayne in lots of films, and did a lot of television, films like The War Wagon, did stunts uncredited for Camelot, Stagecoach, the 1966 version, worked with Burt Reynolds in films like White Lightning. I always remember he did a car jump. He flew a car off a bog onto a moving barge.
Oh, my gosh. So realistic.
Yeah. He is the second stunt coordinator to receive an honorary Academy Award, because he helped change the stunt work as we know it. So there is that. Thank you, Hal. I watched a lot of your films growing up and wish I could recreate those stunts with my bicycle. And they all failed. All right, some words to live by.
Silent Green is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go check out Leah DeWalt and Company, because it's your show, at the 1940s Radio Hour up at Civic and Carmel, running through November 9th. Good to see you, Leah.
You as well. Thank you so much.
And, of course, First Mennonite Church, Thursday night, 7 o'clock, November 7th, Risk of Pursuing Your Passion. I'll be moderating that discussion. And go have fun trick-or-treating. You still got an hour, and it's still daylight. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. Kobe, check out something scary or English, or both. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. Bye week for the Lions. Go Pistons. Shut up. You shut up.
We gone. Good night, Fort Myers. Good night, California.